VGCA Bottle Tree.
14JW Mobile.
Sir, how is your day going?
But it's just getting started. How about you?
It's 4 o'clock. Talked to the 5 o'clock, 5:30 group, so forth, and been on DMR. So I've been having a fun time.
I'm up at 5:30, but I was drinking coffee till 6. And then getting all my stuff set up for the market open when my wife pinged me and said she's going to be at the airport at 9:15. So I had to put all that up and head to the airport.
Oh, is she flying out of town, or is it that you're having a show at the airport?
She's coming in from Boise. She's been gone all week. So she returns today from Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, Sally, sometime hopefully, not hopefully, but to the next week or two, I guess she's going on a trip, and she'll be leaving probably out of Asheville.
Things true for Eric. His wife's going to the Netherlands, I think he said.
I would love to go there.
Coat. They're going to go there. It's probably cold.
Now he's going to have to take a coat, too, because she's going out to the Rocky Mountains there, to Lake Mile High City.
Getting pretty cold out there, too.
Curious to see how she does with her breathing at that altitude, so she wears a CPAP here.
She used to have trouble breathing, and she would go out west and stay there for a while to help with her breathing, to help get better. I don't know what, I guess the dry air makes a big difference.
Maybe with my dad was in the military, they actually sent my dad to Las Vegas because of my allergies and so forth, and we only spent 10 months out there because the dry air didn't help me at all. So, but needless to say, we went from, let's see here, Las Vegas to, I think, Plattsburgh, New York, up north, where the cold weather killed just about all the pollen. And it was nice living up there, KA3JCA.
Good reason for moving up north. I think there's more reasons to move down south than there is to move up north. But that's just me coming from living up there part of my life.
I used to live in Delaware. I mean, it got cold, but not as cold as my brother gets in upstate New York. So, and then I loved it when I lived in Florida, man. You could, I mean, I had a job that I could go to work in shorts, a polo shirt, and sandals every day of the week.
Air conditioning, right? W4DJW.
It was air conditioned, but I was a program director for a YMCA. My specialty was aquatics and youth sports, so I spent a lot of time outside around the pool. So it was either that, or I wore one of those lifeguard tank top shirts and a pair of swim trunks. Because I was either in the water teaching swim lessons or lifeguarding.
Water all day, that's like the equivalent. That's probably even better than air conditioning. That's one of the reasons when we go to the beach or down to the Caribbean, I stay in the water all the time. Because it is hot, but you don't mind the hot because it's wet.
I mean, when we hired our lifeguards to work for the summer, you know, one, we trained them to be lifeguards. We also trained them to be swim instructors, too. But occasionally you get some that just were no good at teaching. I found myself getting in the water a lot of times teaching the kids to swim, and they loved it because Mr. Richard only had one leg, and they get curious and like, where's your leg? And I tell them, well, act like a fish and put your head in the water, see if you can find it. They would do it.
Just an area over here near the airport, there's people out and about like crazy this morning. It's really, really busy. Greenville Spartanburg area is really growing, you know?
Yes, indeed. So, I was going to ask you, I saw that there's on APRS-5, there's an icon for the 8-2 machine and the 6-10 machine, at the repeater location, and I think there was something else up there. Is that something you just tagged just one or two times with fixed coordinates?
Apers objects. Anybody can create an Apers object, and it represents where anybody is coming in town who doesn't know where the repeaters are. It shows them where the repeaters are.
Saw that. It was actually, maybe it's been there before and I just happened to see it yesterday and it stood out, because I've been trying to help a couple of people refine their KPRS settings on digital so that when they're talking, they're actually on the road and it beacons correctly so that, not too much, but enough that it shows you traveling down the road instead of traveling and it beacons 30 minutes later and it shows you like traveling across the mountain and not on the roadway.
How you create them in the other software, in the newer software, in the older software, you could just click the left mouse on the location and then right click and say create an object. And you just type in all the information about that object and it uses the point that you clicked with your left mouse click and places the object there. And then you could drag it around too if you want to. That's called UI View. That's a really, really good Apers client that the author passed away, but the software lives on.
UI View, is that for the PC?
DOS version of it. I don't know if there's a Mac version of it or not. Not DOS, but Windows. There's a Windows version of it. And there might be Mac, but it's probably one of the best Apers clients ever built, and there probably will be very few that ever come up to the same standard that it has.
Okay, I will have to definitely look that up.
The author had cancer, and his wife decided to keep the software going by the cost of the software is you just have to contribute to your cancer research of your choice, right? If you contribute to that, and she'll take your word for it, you don't even have to prove to her that you've done it. But when you go register, and she doesn't care how much you donate, she just wants you to contribute to cancer research, and she'll send you a registration number that you can use. And you use that. You have to have that number to run the client. But anybody can get one. You just have to, you could donate $1 is all you'd have to donate. And you get the registration key that you need for it. But so, and it's really good software. It'll even do dynamic maps using an older precision mapping mapping software. So if you can get your hands on precision mapping, it'll integrate with that.
That's what I was heavily into APRS before. I used to use precision mapping and street data, the CDs for the mapping and so forth like that, which was awesome. So, yeah, I'll have to look at that because I lost a partner to cancer, and I made a big contribution to the cancer in memory of the girl that I was dating prior to me burying Sally. So, I have a special place in my heart for people with cancer.
Google UI View, and you'll read all about Roger. He was the author of UI View, and his wife keeping it running, which is I'm thankful because I haven't found any APRS software that even comes close to matching its capabilities. So I think you'll like it. W4DJW.
Oh yeah, I like it. I mean, I'm actually reading. I bet as soon as you gave me that, I googled it. I guess that's one nice thing about like being bedridden. I got my radio. I got my camera for my front door. My hotspot's here. My DMR radio and my laptop is here. So it's like as people are talking, man, I'm typing just as fast. So, but yeah, I already have it up, but I'm sitting here reading about it. KA3JCA.
You know, I'm at the airport. I'm second in line to the pole position, right up next to the baggage received. And my wife just texted me and said she's going to be there. They're leaving from Atlanta late. They're going to be 30 minutes late getting here. And I am 15 minutes early getting here. So it looks like I got a 45-minute sit.
got Tate to come by for coffee. How we live, probably 10 minutes from the airport. But you can say that or go sit in the phone call lot or the cell phone lot, whatever they're referring to now.
If you get out of your car, they will tow your car away. And you don't have to be out of it long, probably 30 seconds. If you get away from your car for a minute, you're in trouble.
It was that way that literally I was coming out of a flight, and I'm in a wheelchair, and my wife was parked right out front. She opened the door, got out of the car to come around to help me get in the car, and the guy come over, and he didn't see me because I'm sitting down in a chair, and so he's on the outside lane where the driver's side is, telling my wife that she has to stay with the car. She's trying to explain to him that my husband's right here, he's handicapped, we're trying to load him.
Exactly what you're talking about. I get out, when I bring her here, I get out of the driver's side to go open the passenger's door on her side to get her luggage out to set it on the sidewalk so she can take it inside and, you know, do her thing. And the cops start walking my way when they see me getting out of the driver's side, thinking that I'm going to leave my car there. And I don't have any intentions of leaving it there. And then when they see me get her suitcase out and kiss her goodbye, then they turn around and go back to where they were. But that's how paranoid they are.
What? So, alrighty, sir. Well, I'm loving the software for the logging program, so I'm working with it. I actually discovered something the other day that I did not know, that you could click on the call site or the location or whatever, and it'll put it in the correct alphabetical order, ascending or descending. I didn't realize it did that.
Put on any column. If you double-click column header on any column, that's that grid widget. That's nothing I did extra. That's just the grid widget that I used has that capability. So you can sort on. There's two numbers there. The number is the number for that particular logging session, and then there's the number in the global database that you have. So you can sort it on either one of those. You can also double-click on anybody's name with the left mouse, and it'll pop up in a window and tell you how many times they've logged in with you and on what days. And in the middle of the bottom of that box, you can click on that one. There's a button there you can click on, and it'll show you everybody that you've ever logged in one big grid.
Definitely have done the double-click where I've seen where, like, Sally's checked in this many times. But I'll have to check the other button out, too, see how that look, what that one looks like.
30 or 40,000. Very powerful computer, or it's going to take a minute or two to load it all. It's got to allocate a lot of memory to show you all of that to make it dynamic so you can scroll through it without it taking too long to scroll. But it should, while your database is small, it should be fairly fast.
It is. I have to go back and look. This one was either 8 and I upped it to 16 gig of RAM, or it's 16 and I upped it to 32. I forget which one.
Upgrade is I went from 16 to 32, and I went from 8-core processor to a 16-core processor, and using an NVIDIA, the fastest RTX NVIDIA that's out there on the market, and man, is that nice when you get it, but you know, a few years down the road, like all the other ones, it'll be slow again.
Put out the garage that I need to put a new hard drive in because the hard drive went bad on it. But I want to say I have two of the NVIDIA cards, the high graphic cards that I bought back in like 2000. Actually, it may not be as old as I think it is. I think I bought them in 2011 or 2010 that I bought them. So yeah, I guess it's 12 years old. But that I had a couple of terabyte hard drives in there. And I was going to buy a couple more and raid those drives. But then I want to say I either had a 4 or an 8-core processor because I used to log into SETI and let them use my computer to run additional background calculations.
To be doing that, I don't know how much SETI does that anymore, but there's Compute Grid and there's World Compute and there's Boyonics, and there's a lot of them still out there that allow you to allow them to use their your computer in its spare time for their research. And that's what I was doing with protein folding for COVID-19 for the last 2 or 3 years. And I did let them use my computer, and it did run. I mean, they would run up the CPU, all the CPU and all the RAM, and the room stayed hot the whole time. It's like a heater in that room. It kept the room hot even when the air conditioner was running. But it was worth it, I guess. The rack in the other room, rack of 94 Raspberry Pi CPUs, it kept that room warm too. So two rooms in the house didn't have to have heating.
Did you you actually have a rack of like that many Raspberry Pis? K3JCA.
16s were, you know, figured out, you know, what how to fold the back how the proteins to make vaccines that are really, really weak. After they figured that out, they didn't need us doing that anymore. So I shut down the rack, and now I'm using the Raspberry Pis. I'm finding all kinds of use for the Raspberry Pis. So I'll take a rack apart and use it for something else. I put cameras all around the house using two racks, and then I took another couple of racks for amateur radio direction finding, and I've got a couple of them for stepper motor drivers for antenna trackers. So there's plenty of things to use Raspberry Pis for. So you don't have to work hard to figure out what the next one's going to be used for.
On Amazon the other day, trying to find a 3B Raspberry Pi, and they're so hard to find now, and they're so expensive.
Yeah, 23. If you go to the Pi Foundation, you'll find out that they said don't expect any new ones until 2023. And I bought mine from DigiKey in bulk back before the chip problem happened. So I would go to DigiKey and I'd buy 8 of them at a time. And I did that time and time again until I got the, you know, with the 8 gigs of RAM, until I got the performance that I wanted with folding proteins. But, and that was good. I had no idea they were going to shut down like this, but I wouldn't pay what they're asking. I wouldn't pay that. I think some places are asking for like $180 for a Raspberry Pi. That defeats the purpose, right? That's the whole reason for building it, was making it affordable to students so that they would get involved in it. And then when somebody goes out there and tries to scalp them for $180, I would never support that.
I'm a firm believer, if I have to pay, I think it's more than 50%. That seems a little high, but I might as well buy it brand new if I have to pay more than 50% of what it costs. So a lot of times too, if I have to pay more than 25%, I'd rather just buy a brand new one. That way, it's got the warranty, it comes with no issues, no problems, and if it does, you have a place to take care of it.
This is true. As the only people I think that are getting them right now are the new ones from the company, legitimate. You can get a new one, but it's from a scalper that either already had them or got on a list and it gets them through the list. And I got on all those lists too, the email list, and they'll tell you when they're going to come out. You can go try to beat everybody else to the punch, but unless you're like sitting at the computer when it comes in, chances are you're not going to get it. And then those guys that are getting them are scalping them. So it's still a new Pi, but it's at a scalped price. If you have to have it, okay, I can understand that. But if you just want it, wait to 2023.
Okay, it's JC Friday. Yep. Well, if you've got a few extra Pis, I mean, I don't want any, but if you want to get into DMR, I'll give you what you need to do and what addresses you need to download the imaging software. If you need it for the Raspberry Pi, you probably are already familiar with it. But I can help you get set up on DMR, sir.
Things on my list, but my list is long. So eventually I'll be doing that. But I hope to be able to get into it on the backbone of the DMR, not on any special implementation, but on a backbone that allows it to communicator chips through the SPDX protocol, that is like the underlying protocol for all of them.
Well, that's what I'm getting ready. I actually have two. I have a 3B and the 4B. And the 4B, I'm actually getting ready to. It came reconfigured in simplex mode operation only, is what it was configured. And I'm actually getting ready to reprogram it to a gateway. And on it, I'll have DMR. I'll have the TGIF network. I'll have the DMR Plus. I'll have DMR to YSF. And I'm not sure if I'm going to activate any P25 or any or the NXDIN, if I'm going to activate that, but it'll allow it the hotspot to change to, you know, different servers, and you could use a different radio, you know, like for D-Star, C4FM, and you could do all kinds of stuff with one hotspot.
The fusion, the Yaesu fusion, and I haven't read the book on how I'd like to try to figure that out. And you know, it's kind of like the old Kenwood radios that could send pictures. You can do pictures with that as well. So there's no end. Well, I just pulled up my wife's phone location. She's over Artwell, so she's getting close now. They just crossed the coming up. They're in South Carolina, over Lake Hartwell, coming past Anderson.
That's been a low enough altitude for you to get that signal.
She'll usually upgrade her tickets so that she gets free Wi-Fi the whole time that they're flying. And I can see her the whole time she's flying, no matter where she is. So that's kind of handy. That's nice. You know, she shares her location with me. We both have iPhones. And I can see her as she's moving along it. 400 knots.
We do that not so much to track, actually. I mean, she's 27. We trust her, and she's responsible. But at the same time, it's actually come in handy because she is awful with directions. And she's had a couple issues on the interstate where we've had to go get her and so forth like that. Now, we had Sprint, and it's now T-Mobile. And I'm glad they merged to an extent because the tracking is so much faster than it was before. It seemed like under Sprint, initially, it would only update every minute and a half. KA3JCA.
AW. Yeah, that is really handy. I like it. Back before they had that on iPhones, I used to, I put an icon on her desktop, on her laptop. And she stayed before phones, you know, she stayed on the laptop a lot. And she could click on that, and it would bring up the Apers map, and she could follow me on my motorcycle up on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So she'd pull it up, and a little while later she'd pull it up again, and if the icon was in the same place, she'd get worried. As long as the icon kept moving, she was fine with it. So we've been using that technology for a long time. Started with Apers, and now it's on iPhone, and it's kind of handy to have. Because I never could see where she was, but she could always see where I was.
Man, that comes in handy big time. That's one thing I do miss, Dave, is I used to ride motorcycles. And when I was in Delaware, I had an incident where I hit a patch of clear ice and laid the bike down. The bike wasn't injured, and neither was I. I got back on the bike, drove the bike home, and my Honda CM400E was actually sold that same day. And I didn't get back into it. I just kept my motorcycle endorsement because it's easier to keep than to get rid of it and try to get it again. But I told Sally I wouldn't mind buying me one of the new tricycles. But I don't know which is better, to buy the one with a single wheel in the back and the two wheels up front, or the two wheels in the back and the single wheel. But I want to get it so that I can go riding again and put Sally on there, you know, on the bike with me when I go.
Preferred either, but those things catch my eye every time I see one, and it doesn't matter if it's front wheel, you know, single front wheel or dual front wheels, but they are interesting. I know that a long, long time ago, I used to ride a tricycle bicycle inside Michelin, the plant, because I'd have to go all over the plant picking up samples and take them back in the lab and sample, you know, do tests on them. And I know if I get going around a corner too fast, you can bring up that inside wheel on the back. But you could control it with how much you turned the handlebars, right? So I could bring it up intentionally, and I could put it back down anytime I wanted to. I don't know how the ones with the one wheel in the back handle that and two wheels up front. That would be interesting. Does it just break traction and slide around, or does it lift that front wheel? That'd be kind of fun to figure out in an empty parking lot, you know?
Well, trust me, if I decided to purchase it, I'm going to go test drive each one just to make sure. But one of the other things that I have to worry about is getting a little small trailer to tow behind the bike. And I guess if I did that, I guess having the tires at the back would be better. But the trailer needs to be big enough, but yet small enough to carry my power chair. So that when I got off the bike, that I would have something to get into to move around.
That too, all different sizes. From the tiny little ones that you probably forget that they're back there, to pretty big ones that will haul a lot of stuff. So those do look interesting. I've never gotten into it. My wife wants me to sell mine because I don't use it much anymore. But I've never been without a bike my whole life. And that would take some getting used to. That takes something to get used to. I could probably sell it, but ouch, you know?
Losing my leg. I did, part of me always wanted to get a Harley. I just like the way they sound. KA3JCA.
I mean, for a Harley, I've never ridden a motorcycle that you lean backwards on instead of leaning forward on. I've always leaned forward, except for on long trips when I would lay down on the bicycle with my feet on top of the handlebars and my hands behind my head on the back of the seat, the part that rose up. That's the only time I ever leaned backwards. And that's on a really, really long trip where, like, going from Greenville to Columbia is like the boringest ride ever if you're going, like, down toward the beach. So from Greenville to Columbia, I'd lay down on the bicycle. I'd get the strangest looks from cars that I was either passing or they were passing me because my hands weren't on the handlebars. They were back behind my head, and my feet were on the handlebars. But, you ride one long enough, you get really comfortable like that. That's, I know it sounds dangerous, but it's not really that dangerous.
I'm saying that just, you become comfortable with the bike and become one of the bike with the bike. And it's easy. What you have to worry about is the people around you not paying attention or not seeing the bike. That's where the issues come in.
Yeah, and that's with all things. I mean, any time you're dealing with, like when I'm riding the bike and I see a car come out of the side road and stop, I don't assume they're going to say stop. I assume they're going to pull out. And my hand is hovering, one hand over the clutch and the other one over the brake, and my foot ready to hit the back brake, all at the same time. And because they'll look you dead in the eye and pull out in front of you while they're looking at you. I mean, it's incredible how people just, they're blind to motorcycles.
Even if you have the headlights on, it's like you're right, they don't see you. Because then I've seen people flash the light, trying to make sure that they see you. And then sometimes the driver interpolates that as, oh, he's giving me to go ahead and pull out, you know. So there's no set rules for that, I guess.
Motorcycles, that they can stop so fast, so incredibly fast with that front brake. It's just wild how quick you compare to a car. So if you're prepared for it and you're watching for it, then you can usually solve for it. It's only if you're not prepared for it and it happens that's when you get into trouble.
That it may sound weird, that you may, like I said, I don't want to say you will believe it or you won't believe it, but, you know, I got hit. I was on a farm tractor, and that's what resulted in the loss of my leg. When I got out of the hospital, it took me a while to get back into driving, per se, just because of my health issue and trying to recover and get my strength back up. But when my parents brought me home from the hospital for like a 2-day or 3-day pass, it was almost like I could see through the car in front of me and around me and through trees, when you know, like looking for cars pulling out or kids coming out toward the roadway. It was almost like your mind lets you see through those objects to make sure nothing was going to jump in front of you.
because you're acutely aware of what's going on around you, even if it's just a flash of a piece of paint on a car going through some trees, so a gap in the trees, you see that, and you know there's something coming through there. You don't know what it is, but you know there's something coming through there. I know exactly what you're talking about.
That to some people, they tell me I'm crazy. Well, I tell them, you experience what I did. I swear to God, it's like having X-ray vision. But I do. I miss it. That's the same thing. I have my pilot's license, too. And, of course, after I lost the leg, I had to give up flying. I just never got around to going up with an FAA medical examiner. And, of course, it had to be an FAA examiner and an FAA medical examiner that both would give me my checkout just, you know, to prove that I was capable of flying. And, of course, I had a couple of CFI friends that I would go fly with them, and they knew that I could fly and do it. Just I never got around to scheduling an appointment. And then, of course, now that I have heart issues and diabetes, I've pretty much given up flying.
And just not so much full scale. I did the full scale thing, and it's kind of like James, a friend of mine when I was at Michelin. We both did electro-discharge machining, and he was like the radio. No, he was the navigator on like a B-29, I think it was. And he was really, this was 40, 50 years ago, and he was my age back then. Something to do. And he told the way he described flying full scale, and I agree with him, it was hours and hours of boredom interrupted by brief moments of stark terror. And that's the way I saw full scale flying. When I was getting, you know, racking up hours to get my private pilot's license, it was boring. Once you got up there, and you're just, it takes so long. I mean, you see how far, they go a lot faster than cars. You know, you're cruising at 90 miles an hour across the ground, but you go so much further that it takes a whole lot longer because you can, just because you can. And so that does get boring. I never had as much fun. Now, my cousins flying up in Michigan, they used to, like, do stunts and stuff like that. So that wasn't quite so boring. But when you're just up there flying around from one place to another to rack up hours, yeah, that's not really a lot of fun.
It was racking up my hours, especially right after I got my ticket. I got heavily involved in Civil Air Patrol, and I would fly the Civil Air Patrol airplane just to keep time on the planes, but the cost was a lot cheaper, and I could participate in submissions at the same time. So, yeah, that was nice. I was going to ask you, are you into those drones that you fly that have cameras?
A drone in the sense of it is autonomous. It has the ability to perform logic without a human interaction. Yes, but I have very few of those. Drone in the sense of a multirotor that's sold by DJI that has a camera up front. Those are multirotors, and yes, I do fly those as well, but those don't have any AI in them. All right, they're not able to make any decisions by themselves, but they do fly and they do work good. They have their place, too. It's just nowhere near as much fun as developing one that does have the ability to make logical decisions.
So this leads me to my next question. Do you currently have or did you have, like, a white pickup truck at one time?
Toyota Tacoma, a 1996 green Toyota Tacoma pickup truck.
That you and I might have met before. There was a gentleman out at the Breyers Ham Fest one year that was launching his multi-rotor type drone up and flying over the Ham Fest, recording video of the Ham Fest and the users and the whole episode and so forth like that, which I thought was fascinating at the time. That's what kind of got me interested in drones, but I had not yet made a purchase of a drone yet.
There's the fairgrounds over there in Spartanburg one time and posted them. This was many, many years ago, though, a long time ago, and I think I did use a multirotor to do that. but that was a long time ago, and I didn't have a white pickup, but I could have been sitting on the back on the tailgate of somebody else's pickup. That wouldn't be anything out of the norm.
Yeah, I could have. It may have been. I remember I was at the club, and I'm going to say it would have been around 2017, maybe.
Doing a lot more flying than I went for a long time without flying because I switched jobs, and then I went for a time without flying much before that for some other reason. I don't remember exactly what it was. It might have been contracting, but work gets in the way of life every now and then, but work is responsible for life, so that conundrum. But around 2015 is when a buddy of mine from Germany was over here for about 3 years. His name was Michael. He worked at BMW, and we did a lot of actual drone development, right? Automated intelligence flying, not purchase off the shelf DJI multirotor kind of flying.
So I was just curious. I was trying to figure out if you're the person that I met at the Ham Fest. That I don't know. You might have. My memory's not like it was, so I'm trying to visualize it, so forth like that, but it's so hard to say. It takes you a while to recognize people's voice, then to remember their call signs. And like I said, I think if I saw you in person, it would tell me yay or nay, but it's just one of those things that just, we were talking about stuff, and I've heard you talking about drones before. I was like, oh, I got to ask him this while I'm thinking of it. KA3JCA.
It's highly probable. There's some years that I wasn't as active in the Briars Club as I am now, or I was in 2004. There's a period of time in between there where I was just too busy doing other stuff, going back and forth from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I think a lot of people that were really active before kind of got inactive, and now are starting to get radioactive again. So I guess it goes up and down for everybody. It's like that for everybody. There's times when you're really, really busy with it, and times when you got other things you got to do that get in the way of it.
Check in or chime in. Go ahead, KA3JCA. I thought I heard somebody in there. But, your wife should be closer now.
Yeah, and she's right out there on the tarmac. I don't know that they've deboarded yet, but she is on the other side of the building from me. But it doesn't update as fast as an APRS position update happens. I don't know why, but there's more lag in iPhone's position update. But I see she is at the airport now. She is on the ground. I just don't know where she is. So she might come up here knocking on the glass any minute now because I don't see her. Usually what she does, she comes out and sits in the car while I go in and wait on her baggage to come out. So if I disappear, you'll know what happened. W4DJW.
I can say, here, talk to Richard. No, I understand that. So, but, I usually, if they're flying in and they approach the airport from the south kind of, I don't know, I think the runway is one of them is like 04, I think. I have to go back and look. But part of the approach path is like they fly right over my house.
Henderson, so I guess the wind is blowing out of the north down toward the south because they did the south approach and landed. At least I didn't see her go. Her plane didn't show her icon go north of the runway and come south. It just showed her coming from the south and then on the ground in the on the ground right here at the airport. I didn't see any big arc where they turned around.
Yeah, so since they're coming from that direction, yeah, they probably did like a straight-in approach or whatever. But yeah, I think a lot of times if the plane's coming from the north, they come down and they make that arc and that turn and they come and they do. They fly right over my house. There's a lot of times we've had friends fly into Greenville and we go to the airport to pick them up. So with the plane, actually, I monitor it on that track the flight number, U.S. flights and so forth. I monitor it that way. And when they fly over the house, we could jump in the truck and drive to the airport and pull right up front. And about the time we get there, within probably a minute to 5 minutes, they're walking out with their bags.
Got in the car. As you were talking, she got in the car, so I got to go in and get the baggage. So I'm going to say 73, good talking to you. Enjoy the rest of the day. Maybe I'll talk to you later in the day. KA3JCA, W4DJW.
73, KA3JCA.